Welcome to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on March 10th, 2013.
Good morning, my friends. It's good to see you here. It's good to be here with you. What we are about here is that in the course of a number of years, over 14 or 15 years, we have come to see that there is an act of the mind, an act of that entails nothing more than using your attention. That when taken, this act, this mental act that you do for yourself within your mind, within your own mind, when done, changes everything. Changes everything about our relationship to our lives, our relationship to ourselves, our practical understanding of what we can and cannot do, and opens the door to a life that is fully engaged with, fully satisfying and fulfilling, without regard to the particulars of the experiences that are present at the time. It doesn't eliminate bad experiences. It doesn't eliminate anything, really, except the underlying conviction that there's something wrong with your life, or something wrong with you, one or the other, or maybe both. The underlying conviction that whatever it is that you're doing here, you're not getting what you came for. And the underlying sense that life as a human being in particular, is complicated. Too complicated for us to be happy with it. Too unpredictable. Maybe even out to get me. We have, over the course of our life, our lifetime, whatever, however long that might have been for you at this time, we have acquired, driven by that underlying sense that there's something wrong with life or there's something wrong with me, we have acquired a whole universe of ways in which we relate to life, relate to our inner experiences, and relate to one another based on the assumption that this is a dangerous business we're about, being alive as a human being. And those habits of behavior and habits of thought and points of view and so forth that have come into being in service to this underlying assumption that there's something wrong, something profoundly wrong that has to be fixed before anything good can happen. This act of the mind, this movement of attention, destroys that assumption. Now, the assumption itself, of course, is silent during the time it's in play. It is not something that is conscious in our mind. It's not something that we are constantly thinking about. What we're constantly thinking about is what's wrong with me here, something's missing in my life, how can I get better, how does that one do it, how does that one do it, maybe I can get enlightened, maybe I can fall in love, maybe, God knows, maybe I'll go to heaven, probably not. And those assumptions and those points of view and that way of relating to life is just entirely habitual. The usefulness of those ideas and the effectiveness of those ideas in bringing anything good to me is never questioned. We are operating from the unexamined certainty that there's something wrong, that something needs to be done about. This act, this simple, and I mean really kind of Well, it's a very simple act of the mind. Wipes out the foundation and the support for that entire array of things that we do foolishly, trying to find satisfaction based on the assumption that satisfaction is missing, and fail to do so. Now, it turns out that this act is so simple and so, I don't know, just so simple and so not, so seemingly unimportant. It has no big results from it. There's no sudden burst of clarity or freedom or breath of fresh air or any of that that comes from it. For the most part, even the doing of it is overlooked. For the most part, it's very easy to do this act and not even know that you've done it, or not even know that you've accomplished what you set out to do when you started to do it. And despite that, despite the fact that it doesn't make any sense, despite the fact that you get no immediate gratification from performing the act itself, some do, but most don't. Despite all of that, despite its simplicity, despite everything about it, the fact remains that for now thousands of people, and the numbers are growing, and I have to say too, the sophistication of understanding and the clarity of understanding of what's happening here is growing also along with the increase in the number of people who are involved in this, which is to be expected. This, after all, is not a teaching. It's not some doctrine or dogma that if you learn it, everything will be all right. It's an adventure and an investigation and a mutual conversation occurring about what it is to be human, what it is to be really human, unafflicted with this foolishness that holds that life as a human being is lacking, is untrustworthy, is disappointing. The course of what occurs following the actual initial act of looking, it is an act of looking, just looking, not necessarily seeing. Seeing is optional, just looking. The what happens in the aftermath of having performed this act is completely idiosyncratic, except that it follows certain, it seems to be following certain, direction to it in most people. It sometimes produces a period of time where everything seems really wonderful, and everything that has seemed to be terrible and hard has disappeared, and everything is just really soft and sweet. Doesn't always happen, but for most, I think that occurs. And then there's a period that follows that in which there can be considerable distress and confusion and distressed and confusion. And what we've come to see is that that period of enhanced and extreme distressed and confusion that commonly follows a kind of honeymoon period, but pretty much always happens to everyone who does the act. What we think that is now is that these psychological structures and the like that have come into being to serve the idea that I have to be careful and watch out for my own life, that life is unpredictable and dangerous and doesn't deliver what it promises, they go away. They lose their power to hold life at arm's length, so that we suddenly and unexpectedly find ourselves completely with life, completely rushing in on us. And life, the experience of life, wild, strong, beautiful, is appearing within our consciousness with no defenses. The defenses that used to stop that from happening, that used to allow us to hold life at arm's length, are gone. So suddenly, perhaps for the first time in our lives, we have the unfiltered, unmitigated, raw experience of what it feels like to be alive as a human being, and that is extremely powerful. And it causes considerable confusion and distress, as I said, for a period of time. We have found that during that period of time, immediately following this act of looking, that period of time actually can be seen to be a time of great opportunity, a great possibility, if we can use it to as a place in which we can begin to learn clearly and practically what it is we can do about things and what it is we can't do about things. And it turns out that what we can't do about things vastly overwhelms what we can do. And it turns out that really what is the case is that pretty much there's nothing that we can do about much of anything except move our attention, except use the power of attention to learn the practical means whereby we can be in relation with this wild, unpredictable life without the neurotic protection of alienation and negation. And then, pretty much what happens is that either people like you stay here in this community, recognizing the value of a community of people who are embarked upon the same adventure and having similar and understandable experience of life as a result of having embarked upon this adventure, that being part of a community of this greatly enhances our own abilities to be useful to ourselves, to those around us, to the world in general, and to ourselves. That act is, and the thing about it that is the most difficult to grasp, to grok, is that the act itself seems almost silly in its simplicity. It seems almost ridiculous in its lack of complication or complexity. It seems almost childish in the lack of any great philosophical foundation for it. The truth is that that act has only one thing. It doesn't offer much of anything. It has only one thing to recommend it, and that is that it turns out that this simple act is what we have been looking for forever. By we, I mean all of us human beings who recognize the fact that there's something wrong with human life, and it ought not be that way. This simple act, with nothing to recommend it, this infantile, silly, ungratifying act that doesn't seem to make any sense at all, turns out to be exactly what we've been looking for all these thousands of years. This simple act is what actually does eliminate the cause of the experience of human life as being not worth living. It eliminates the cause. And after that, sky's the limit. So, this simple act that I speak of, and is, we call it by the name of looking at you, looking at yourself. We have found, truly, that any human being who will try with all their heart to get the slightest, most fleeting glimpse, taste, kind of a taste of the actual feeling of being me, being this person, me, what that actually feels like at the core of it, at the heart of it, trying to get that taste is what we call looking at yourself. Again, it can seem quite impossible to accomplish. It can seem that you have not accomplished it. There's no guarantee or even interest in whether or not the accomplishment of this act brings any particular positive results in the moment of its accomplishment. What we see as the proof of the pudding is what transpires following the act. And as I said, what transpires following the act is, you know, something that feels okay, and then a period of great distress as the our previous mental tools begin to fall away because their main purpose has been taken away from them. Their main purpose in the past having been to protect me from my own life. And as they fail in that task of holding me away from my own life, life comes rushing in. And over time, well, you will see what happens over time. So this act is very simple, and let's just go ahead and do it, get it done with, and that way I'll know that everybody here, at least, is on the same page as me in the matter of looking or not looking. Again, what we are trying to get is the merest, simple, fleeting taste of what it feels like to be you. What it feels like to be what you call me. What it feels like to be the simplest state of person. To do this, of course, we have to use our attention. And to use our attention, we have to notice the fact that actually, and it's very surprising, I know that myself, for all of my life, and I'm not a young chicken now, but for all of my life, it had never occurred to me to even think about my attention, even consider my attention. It seemed to me for all of my life that my attention was something that went where it was supposed to go. And very seldom did I have to do anything at all to make it go where I wanted it to go. And most of the time when I tried to make it go where I wanted it to go, I failed to do so anyway. So the whole business about attention to me, and I'm not that different from other people, was ignorance, I guess. Ignoring and not knowing. Ignorance. So in order to accomplish the act, the first thing that has to be seen is that you actually do have the power to move your attention at will. Not always, but from time to time, if you focus on the intention to attend to something other than what attention is resting in, you will soon learn how it feels to move attention and what the moving of attention feels like when you accomplish it. This is why we offer and encourage people to work with attention by simple mindfulness training exercises in which you which you try to hold attention on something and notice how easy it is to be distracted from it and then bring your attention back. But for here, we can all do this. We can all move attention sufficient skill to do what I'm wanting you to do, which is to look at yourself. So notice your attention as we're sitting here. Notice the fact that you're paying attention to my voice. Notice that that's what's happening. It's not just that my voice is in your mind. You are attending to my voice. You don't have to attend to my voice. I mean, it'll be here in the background, but you don't have to attend to it. And you have to see that you have that capability of deciding not to attend to what attention is resting on in order to get good at using your attention in the way that it can be used to, oh, you'd be surprised what it can do. So while you're listening to my voice, just right now, as you're listening to my voice, just turn your attention away from my voice for a second and see if you can rest it on the feel of your breath as it comes in and out of your body. It doesn't matter what particular point of the breath, just your breath. And notice that when you decide to move your attention from my voice to your breath, what actually happens is just that the feel of your breath seems to get bigger and feel big. That's all it is to move attention. It gives the experience of having the experience that you are attending to stronger. Okay. Now, using that same methodology, move your attention, trying to find the faint taste of you in the background of everything. There's not much to you. You don't have much in the way of taste. You don't do anything. You don't move. You don't change. But you are, when you taste it, when you taste yourself, it is unmistakably you. And that's what you're trying to get. You're trying to move your attention to get a taste of what is unmistakably you, that has never changed, that is the same now as it has always been, that is unconcerned with the storms and craziness of life and as a human being. It's you, just you. And that's it. That's all that we have to offer. And I might say we offer it and freely give it away at every possible opportunity as we did just now. Sometimes we are better at it, sometimes we're not so good at it, but this is the only reason we're here. This is all there is to the entire solution to the persistent human experience of life as being, well, not what it ought to be, and impossible to escape from. Since this thing is so simple, since what we talk about is so simple, and has nothing whatsoever to recommend it, really, except the fact that it takes away the entire suite of neurotic behaviors and traits and understandings that have been such a pain in the head for us. No great states come to us, no openings, no emptiness, no mind, no no body, no, none of those things. Just me here. Just me here. And since it is so simple, there's not much really to talk about after doing it, except for this. Because, you know, the course of it is, well, right now we have a pretty good community of people and a pretty good circumstance in which the people can be helped and guided and cared for in the period of getting reaccustomed to what it is to feel alive. And that's important. But the most important thing to do now, from my point of view, is not to further the understanding of this act, and not to get some deeper insight into the nature of reality as a result of losing that which had kept us safely tucked away from reality. Not to catalog and describe and understand the experience of life that comes as a result of this. Life speaks for itself, truly. And you will see, or probably you already have seen, most of you, you will see that there's nothing much to be actually said about it. The life is completely your own. Your life is completely your own. Your experience of your life is completely your own. And the conversations about what it feels like to be alive are just not very interesting. Conversations about the wonder of having a full engagement with life are not very interesting. Since this thing is so simple, and since it is absolutely free of charge, and since it doesn't claim anything that tricks people into thinking that they're going to get something other than what they say, and since there is already a community of people working to be helpful and develop the means whereby we can support one another in this reintroduction to our lives. The only thing now that really is of interest is how can we get this into the minds of the whole human community, all 7 billion of us. How can we do that? And that's the kind of thing that occurs as a result of the act itself. When the foolishness departs as a result of the destruction of that context of distrust and fearfulness from which we have viewed life in the past, our concerns become very practical, not spiritual, not philosophical, not artistic. All those things are welcome here. In the world of human beings, all those things are great, wondrous adventures that we have been on. But this particular actual solution to the problem doesn't produce anything that is interesting so much to talk about once the period introduction of you to your life. What counts is getting it into the ears of everybody. We have seen for ourselves that as this community has grown, and it's grown quite quickly in recent times, and as this community has grown, we've seen ourselves that well, we've seen ourselves what's possible. And we've seen ourselves the ease with which this can be actually offered to people, if only we have the will to do so and the pretty insignificant foundation, practical foundation to get it out in the world. So, that being the case, and I tell you, it is true, of course, that there's a lot of discussions that are still going on here within this community. It's not that the discussion of matters that have to do with philosophy or metaphysics or spirituality or anything of the kind are unwelcome here. They're all seen in a brand new, fresh light here. And there are conversations going on here all the time about all those kind of matters too. But what interests us most is we've got to get this out to the world. We are, without regard to how on the edge of collapse the world might be or not be, one thing is sure, and that is that we have a world community consisting of 7 billion human beings, almost all of us afflicted with a false idea about life, a fundamentally false idea about life, which is that life is the problem. Life is what makes me unable to be happy or satisfied or fulfilled. Life is what has produced within me this deep yearning for something other than life. I suppose the day will come when I get a little better at this that I'm trying to do here and a little more focused and sharper in my ways of speaking about it, but it's been, 14 or 15 years now, and I haven't much accomplished that yet. But I'm done. All I have to say really is look at yourself and suggest to your friends and neighbors and the people on the street that they look at themselves and learn how to suggest that in a way that is not immediately rejected by the armies of defense against life. So I'm done. I'm happy to speak to anybody who wants to speak to me. Just raise your hands. Carla has told you how to do that. And we'll talk. It's good to see you here. All right, your turn. Christopher.
May not fit in here, so please just tell me if that's so. I've been thinking about money just the last few days. I've been reading a book called The Millionaire Mind. It may take me just a few moments to get into one or two things. For example, as you were speaking about getting this message out, I'm feeling that if for example I had some riches, which at the moment I don't in that physical sense, but if I did, you know, it would give some assistance perhaps to anything I could do to help get the message out. From another way of looking at this, I one of the things this fellow says in his book that the what happened in our childhood regarding thoughts about money, it tends to have effects in the rest of our life, and I can certainly see how in my own life, for example, as far as money, I for a long time anyway, I didn't think it had much importance at all. But it seems to me there are two ways of looking at this, because on one side of it, I can see that, you know, it could be very nice to have more physical means and so forth, things that you could do, and maybe you could also take out a full page ad in the Denver Post talking about this experience of looking. But this is what's a little hard for me to articulate, but it seems to me that the end objective of any of this kind of activity of seeking to change one's material circumstance has to do with the idea that I'll be more happy. So what comes up for me as an opposing idea, when I do this looking, I realize, I think fairly deeply, that that I'm already as happy, as you use that word, as it's possible to be. I sense and actually experience, you know, something that's but boundless and very, very beautiful. So why go to the trouble of sort of a lot of hard work to accomplish what I can experience just in a moment by taking a look? So really, John, what I wanted to ask, and it may not be appropriate, but whether in your life since looking more in your life, whether how you would describe any changes in your own attitudes or experience, if any of this is useful, you know. If it's not, please just say so.
Well, I think this is very useful. You know, it's on a number of levels, and one being the fact that in human life, in the human community, money is it's part of the whole community of, it is a work of human, of the human community. And it is a means to transfer goods and services and so forth, in a more or less useful way. But the two things about money, and I'm going to get into my experience about it in a second, because it might be useful to you and others. The thing about money is that there are these now in the world in which the human creature is stymied by the relationship with life that is constantly antagonistic and interrogative and so forth, that money is one of those things, and it's a very common one. Another is fame, another is sex, but money really almost stands in a class of its own as a perceived road to satisfaction in life. It is very, very common to think that if I have enough money, that will satisfy me. That'll take away this ache, this sense of lack. And of course, the entire human society is permeated with that relationship with money, in which money is seen to be something to be sought after and acquired in order that I can be free of this feeling of something lacking in me or lacking in life. Other things are also used to that. That's one aspect of money. The other aspect of money you also talk about, which is that it is a utilitarian tool that allows all kinds of ideas to be promulgated throughout the human creature. Good ideas, bad ideas, philosophy, art, science, all these things require a foundation of money in order that they can proceed in the way that people want them to proceed. And these people may be being people who don't see money as the answer to their problem, but something else. Money is very important in the human experience of life. Money is in both of those ways, in the practical sense that money is the means we have come up with, and it's not, you know, it's it works out pretty well. Not so much in this particular society that runs things now, but it works out pretty well as a medium for being able to accomplish things, practical things in the world. My experience with money, and I guess most of you know something about my history. My experience with money was hateful. Yeah, it was hateful. I felt that I never had much money. You know, bank robbery doesn't pay that well when you're using the money to try to, you know, create a social change. And I never had much money, and I always resented the fact that it seemed to me that if I had enough money, I'd be okay, and that I cannot get that amount, that money. There's no way in the world. It never seemed to me that there was any possibility that I would ever be in a position to be able to get enough money that I would see to be enough to provide me with permanent satisfaction in life and so forth, and I resented that. I hated money. I gambled, which is certainly an aspect of the hatred of money, as well as the neurotic love affair with it. Robbed banks. I spent some time in my youth as a machinist, and again, my relationship with money when I worked as a machinist was probably the same as everybody else's, in that there was little connection between the work I was doing as a machinist, which I, by the way, loved, and wouldn't mind having a little machine shop of my own, and the money. There was no real connection there, and it never was enough anyway to do anything other than allow me to come back to work every day. So I didn't spend too much time in that world. And then I spent 18 years in federal prisons, in which money again was the constant irritant, that if I had enough money while I was in prison, and enough money in prison is somewhat considerably less than enough money on the streets, that if I had enough money in prison, I'd be okay, and I could kind of like have a little comfortable life there and so forth. But I never did have enough money, never. My relationship to money as a medium of stabilizing my life and so forth was inexistent. I never paid bills. I tried never to pay rent. I would get get kicked out than pay rent. It wasn't that I would rather. It's just that I couldn't see how I ever could get enough money to satisfy myself and still be able to pay my bills. So I settled for using the money to provide passing experiences of satisfaction instead of paying the bills. There was a particular feeling state that, well, I hope I'm not boring anybody, there's a particular feeling state that was associated with this relationship to money that was kind of nauseous just nauseous, I guess, is the best way to describe it. When things would be coming to a head where I had somehow managed to hold things off for however long I could hold them off by lying or doing whatever I had to do, when the piper had to be paid, then there was a feeling state associated with that that was very familiar to me. And it was kind of nauseous and wanting to escape. The first time that I actually had an opportunity to see what had changed in me due to the relationship, about the my relationship with money, was here in Ojai back in 2001. Well, I don't know, but it was a way, it was a time back when we first got here to Ojai, and we had very little money and very little way of making money. Most of our ways of trying to find make a living in make an honest living by selling things or doing things and so forth had failed, and we were in a moment that was very familiar to us, where there simply was not enough money. And it looked like we weren't going to be able to pay the rent, and we weren't going to be able to pay the electricity, and we had no idea where to go from there, and everything was just in that same state that had been so familiar to me in the past, which always in the past produced flight. Crazy ways of trying to get enough money to escape. It was nighttime, and I was out on the driveway where we were living at that time, and this sick, nauseating feeling and this relationship with money came to me for the first time since I had done the looking, and there was nothing to it. It was nothing to it, and it meant nothing, and it caused nothing, and it was just a neurotic state that had arisen, triggered by this mechanical circumstances that had appeared, and it was nothing. And I did nothing except we went on and continued doing what we were doing, trying to be true and clear, and as was the case and has been the case ever since, money came in enough for us to get by, and things keep going as they were, and so that whole complex, I guess it would have to be called, turned out to have completely disappeared. But I only noticed that when its effect appeared in this hopeless, nauseating sense of feeling state. Now, so that's that. We know we never have enough money. Carl and I are always always on the edge of financial collapse. But that doesn't seem to mean anything. It no longer has any meaning to it. The fact is that as we continue with this work, we are taken care of. The fact is that the money that's needed comes in with, and sometimes we have to reach out to people and say, hey, help, we're on the edge of disaster, and money always comes when it's needed. Things are working out just fine. And now, see, and this is the second part of money. Now, it's really quite obvious to me, and it kind of takes my breath away every time I notice it. It's really quite obvious to me and Carl and to many people that this act really works, and that since it really works, I am more energized and determined than ever before, now that the evidence is piling up and it's so clear. I can no longer, have the thing in the background. Well, yeah, but maybe it won't work. Maybe I'm wrong about this. But turns out that I'm not wrong. It really works. And there are 7 billion human beings out there who really need to hear about this. I don't know what will come of it. I have ideas of what will come of it, and they're all good. But I don't know for sure what will come of it. But it is so plain now that it actually works. It doesn't require any belief. It doesn't require abandoning anything or understanding anything. It just requires doing it. Now the the big fact around money is that, as you were speaking, there are 7 billion human beings out there who really need to hear this. And the only way I can bring it to them, well, there's a number of ways, but all of them are going to entail the acquisition of more money than we have now. You know, we would like to start, for example, we'd like to start putting print ads in certain magazines and so forth. We'd like to start a really comprehensive campaign to get the suggestion, just the suggestion of this act out to the world, and that's going to take money. We also have, as part of this effort, the developing and really quite exciting development of a grassroots program in which people are now trying to work together with themselves and with us to understand ways that this can be communicated, not only by means of advertising and things of that nature, but also by the day-to-day experiences that this growing community has with people that they know, and the possibility of being prepared to bring the suggestion to people when it naturally comes up in their ordinary relationships with one another. And I have to say, there are a lot of really practical and good ideas that are beginning to emerge from that grassroots effort. I've seen that you spend some time in the grassroots hip chat room, and we're talking now about AdWords and phraseology and stuff like that. But now, I can see that we're going to need some money. And I don't yet have a clear sense of how to go about getting it, how to go about reaching out to people to get that kind of support. And it's not, you know, what we're talking about isn't like it certainly wouldn't cost as much as was spent on political ads last year. It cost a fingernail of the amount that was spent on political ads last year. But, you know, and so now I'm just sitting here, and my relationship with money is that, yes, I am looking for money in order to accomplish this purpose, and I just keep my eyes open, confident from my experience in the past that what's needed will come. And if what's needed is for me to be able to see a way of reaching out to people for money, or if it turns out that what's needed is for people who already have money and are interested in doing things that are humanitarian in nature, that they kind of just show up and give us some money, I don't know. But that's my relationship with money. I'm just on the lookout, but not afflicted. Is that helpful?
Oh, that's terrific, John. I really want to thank you very deeply for everything you've shared here. Only another moment here, but I just want to say that this initiative, this path that you have introduced and that you're introducing, it really does work, and it's certainly helping to turn I know in my bones and my heart that I feel that I actually met you at just the right time, and that you were offering something that was just exactly what I needed at that moment, and I'm very sure that whatever abundance does need to appear, it will appear. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm sure of that too. I find now that my kind of default state is optimism, which is very strange for me. There you go. Okay, anybody else want to talk? Happy to talk about anything, as you can see. This business is very practical. It's not ethereal in any way whatsoever. It's very practical. Carl and I spend most of our time, and I have to say we work a lot. And we spend most of our time dealing with mundane technical and other issues that just have to be attended to. No time, I would have to say, speculating or regaling in descriptions of how wonderful life is or anything of the kind. Life is life, and the looking brings a self-reliant practicality to the forefront of the experience of life. Self-reliant practicality. And so there. So anybody else? Good to see you all here. Okay. And I might as well say something about what that technical work entails, because it's kind of a reflection of the, you know, the thing, another thing about this, since you guys aren't talking, I'll just talk. The other thing, just, you know, raise your hand if you get tired of listening to me. A profoundly important insight into the nature of what we have discovered here is that our understanding of it will never be finished. There's never a time when our understanding of this work will be at an end and be able to be wrapped up in a little package and passed on to future generations. The reason for this, I think, is because the actual nature of this work is to bring about the re-entry into the actual unmitigated experience of life as a human being. And the experience of life as a human being is infinitely changeable, moving all the time, changing all the time, new things appearing, old things disappearing. But in any event, there's no time when this thing is going to be contained in some, like, carved in stone tablets or something of that kind, where all that's needed is to receive that teaching and everything will be clear. It's work. It's the work of human life that we're about here. It's the practical work of being human, freed of the limitations that are imposed by the sense that life is wrong and out to get me. And what's happening also, and what we're doing, we have just made, and you know, believe it or not, these things require a lot of kind of heavy lifting. But we have just accomplished the migration of our email newsletters to a new service, which is much more complicated and it took a lot of time for us to really understand how to work with it and so forth. And we're still learning. But the purpose of that was to make this is part of an overall development that's occurring, which is to make our message easy for people. And like in the case of the newsletters, we now have three editions of the newsletter, and we have two or three more that we're going to be putting online soon as well. And the idea behind that is that, like, when you get a newsletter where what you're interested in is what the schedule of events are, for example, the schedule of events here, like this event, or out in the street. When you're interested in what the events are, then you should be able to get a newsletter that is very simple, very clean, very clear, that tells you straightforwardly this is where the events are and this is when they happen and this is how to connect with them. And that's what the events edition is intended to do. The events edition has a simple listing of all the events for this month, including this one, by the way. And we think it's easier on people. It's much more practical and useful to people to be able to divide them up like that. Another is the web edition, which has to do with all the blogs and podcasts and audio video material that we have on the web. And the other is the news edition, which is actually that edition will be coming out again tomorrow, if I can get it finished today, which is bringing news of what's happening in the work, what's happening in the community, and so forth and so on. And that took us like, two or three weeks of steady work to get the migration accomplished into the newsletter. Our next project is to simplify and make more useful to people the entire website, the entire web presence. And that's what we're working on now. And we're doing this because we now, in the past, our audience has been mostly the people who have had spiritual paths, have followed spiritual paths or self-help paths of one kind or another, or psychotherapy, or things of that nature. People who have been in self-help contexts in the past, whether spiritual, religious, practical, whatever. Now we are having seen how vital it is that this get out to the human community. We are engaged in a project that will take probably at least a month, in which we are going to redesign our entire web presence in a way that people who are just, that are not part of any particular approach to life, whether it be self-help, spiritual, religious, alcohol, whatever. People are not involved in not already involved in a deliberate effort to help themselves be happy in their own lives. People who are, playing drinking games and doing whatever else people do, going to work every day. Whatever else people do to get through the day, where we want to be able to reach them. And in order to reach them, we have to have a presentation that is less focused on what it has been focused on in the past because of the nature of our community and the nature of this audience. So we're learning how to do that. And all of every page on the websites, everything that we do, Carla and I, by hand ourselves. Every website, every page, and every website has been hand-coded by Carla or me. So that's what we do with our time, and that's what this looking has brought us to the joy of approaching a problem of this magnitude, not a problem in a bad sense, but a problem of this magnitude, the problem of how do you get a simple, free of charge, no strings attached suggestion of a simple, seemingly innocuous and irrelevant mental act of the mind, how do you get that into the ears of 7 billion people? That's the problem now. That's what we're learning to, that's the problem that life has brought us, that our lives have brought us. And that's the nature of our lives now is working within that, context, the context of learning how to and implementing and being, you know, paying attention to what it is we're saying and so forth, and paying attention to not deceiving people or deluding them or doing anything of the kind. That's our work now. That's our life now. That's the way our life is. And that life is lived right here in meetings like this and in our computers with building things and putting things together and so forth. And it's a life that has brought us great satisfaction. I'm not exactly sure why I went into all that, except it seemed like given my conversation with Christopher, there was a taste here for practical reports about what it is to be a human and not crippled by an underlying sense that life is wrong. And so that's our life. Okay, anything else? Your life will be similar. It won't be, you know, like this, but what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to suggest to you is that the things that were in your life before will be in your life now. And they will develop as they always do develop. They always change. They're always moving. They're always, you know, showing new things and getting rid of old things. And that'll proceed as it always has proceeded. What will change is your ability to kind of play in that life, free of the neurotic sense that something's lurking around the corner, free of the need to hide away, free of the need to find peak experiences to keep the hope alive. Okay? One last little thing, and then I'm going to leave. The one thing that is absolutely missing from my experience of life and Carla's experience of life, how can I say this, is the idea that the hugeness of what we have taken on here, or actually, that's giving us too much credit, what has taken us here, that the hugeness of it and the difficulty of it is something that stands in the way of satisfaction. And just as with us, whatever difficulties and confusions and complications arise within your own life, you will come to see that they too do not stand in the way of satisfaction. In fact, they are the vehicle of satisfaction. The constant, the consistent, continuous engagement with the way life unfolds is the satisfaction that we have sought all along, trying to escape from those things. So that this work that Carl and I are doing is the satisfaction of our lives. It's not something we have to finish in order that we can be satisfied. And that's the way it goes. That's the actual experience of being a human being. Human life is what's of interest. Human life, the wildness of it, the unpredictability of it, the seeming promise of it, all the aspects of human life that we are familiar with. That's the gift. That's the goal. That's the reward. That's what satisfies. Never does human life stand in the way of satisfaction. Okay, I'm done now. Thank you for paying attention to me and listening to me for so long. I know Carla has something to say, and so, Carla, it's your turn.
You just listened to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on March 10th, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.